I want to share with you some of Martin Luther King's text from his speech, I Have a Dream. Think of the context. He was standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Of course, Lincoln gave the Emancipation Proclamation. This was August 1963. This was during the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. I'm not going to read the whole thing. He says, "Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friends, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out of the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I will go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day, this will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty. And if America is to be a great nation, this must come true. So let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. But not only that, let freedom ring from the Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And when this happens, when we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black and white, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last. I get goosebumps reading that. Prophets are not always popular. Martin Luther King was assassinated for his words and leadership just 4 years after that speech, mere months after he gave the Massey Lectures in Toronto in 1967. Yet his dream of freedom for all still lives, even if he cannot be the spokesman. But his words live still. His words still speak. I cannot forget his unmistakable voice preaching his speeches. The speech that I just read from I Have a Dream is considered one of the best examples of American rhetoric delivered in the Black Baptist style. He was an accomplished voice for justice and freedom. Prophetic voices of the prophets. Who needs them? They're so often ignored. I read a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon recently. You may remember Calvin, that hyperactive kid who had the stuffed tiger that he treated like he was real. Well, on this day, Calvin alone is walking past the phone, ringing away on its little table. He keeps walking right past it, finally reaching the outlet into the wall. He unplugs it and says, "It's never for me, and I hate taking messages." How often do we tune out the phone calls that come our way? David in our story didn't think the call was for him. And we know that it's much easier to not take the message than it is to ignore it. The prophets of the Old Testament were often discounted and ignored, no matter how often they railed against human frailties of their people. Prophets live today too. A prophet is anyone who calls us to our best self, to our humanness at its best. They have a vision of a better world, even if some part of it, and they call us to help them make it happen. They call us to be in right relationship with each other. Most of us would rather not be reminded, though. It might mean doing things that are hard to do or taking time out of our already busy days. It might mean that we need to update our thinking or give up some money or power and status. Being a prophet can be a lonely business. Just ask Jonah. Remember he of the whale? That's why he got in the whale. He was trying to escape. Voices of prophetic women and men are specifically listed as one of the sources of our living tradition, the tradition of Unitarianism. We need to reflect on those who do call us into right relationship. We need their example. Being concerned with social issues is one of the hallmarks of Unitarianism. In the mid-1800s, Unitarians like Theodore Parker opposed slavery in the Boston area. Later in the 1800s, Emily Stowe organized and spoke for women's rights in Ontario and was Canada's first woman physician. Universalist Clara Barton founded the American Red Cross in 1881. In 1945, Lotta Hitch Minova founded Canada's Unitarian Service Committee. Religion matters in social issues. Tomorrow is the day that the United States celebrates one of its great prophets. I was living in the U.S. in 1968. I was a junior in high school. I must have heard about his assassination, but I don't remember much about it. The race riots that happened before and after it were so out of my experience that I didn't know what they were about or what they meant. I wish now that I had had someone who cared about it enough to explain it to me, to tell me why people were risking so much of their life and limb. I did not know that I should care. I needed someone to call me. When I got to university in 1969, I had looked for a Unitarian church on or near the Ohio State University campus, but there wasn't one, and you needed a car to get to it. The bus didn't get there. I would not have connected learning about social issues with church at that time, though. I hadn't connected those things. I have known people who have decided that they didn't belong in a UU church because church and social issues, they don't go together, do they? Well, not for them, but it is for us. I also enjoy the cartoon For Better or For Worse by Lynn Johnston. In one strip, Liz and her friend Candace, you may remember that she's the one who has the difficult family life, are on the bus traveling back to campus after Christmas holidays. Candace says, "Another 4 hours and we're home, Liz." "Yeah, holiday's over." Candace reflects ironically on her holiday. What holiday? My mother's boyfriend is a pervert. She sides with him against me. I end up at your place. Happy New Year. Liz joins the lament. My mom still treats me like a kid, and I go out with my ex-boyfriend who's engaged, but still loves me. I know he still loves me, and I'm so confused. Candace agrees. Yeah, life would be so easy if it weren't for relationships. Candace has it right. Life is all about relationships. Relationships are what make life meaningful and interesting and difficult. Relationships feed us and nurture us in all kinds of ways, from basic food and housing and physical care at the end and the beginning of life, to spiritual nurturance the rest of the time. When we are in right relationship, we are happier. Prophets call us to be in right relationship with the rest of the world beyond our intimate circle. They call us to think about justice and fairness and to apply those abstract principles to others who are less powerful. For theologian Paul Tillich, faith encompasses three dimensions: trusting, believing, and doing in a dynamic relation. Believing with conviction means holding beliefs and values as your own. It is a cognitive act. Believing is a head thing. Trusting is the emotional aspect of faith. It entails feelings of awe, wonder, reverence, adoration, hope, and surrender. Relationships with yourself, with others, with the earth, and with whatever we individually hold sacred fit here. Trusting is a heart thing. Doing is the summation of belief and trusting. Your values around justice and relationship manifest themselves in what you do or practice. Without the doing, faith remains an abstraction in our heads only. Doing means to embody your beliefs. Live your life as if it meant something. If I had been paying attention to the words of Martin Luther King, I might have learned. I might have learned about the racism that I was oblivious to. Not that I was very different from many other white people at the time. King was trying to share his vision of an America where blacks and whites shared opportunities, shared a place in the sun. Perhaps he genuinely thought that legislating voting privileges would be a genuine beginning to racial equality. More likely, he understood it was only the first step, and a small one at that. He had a vision of better reality, his dream of freedom for his people and all people. Martin Luther King's dream lives on in those who carry it, those who live it. It is part of the reason his memory is celebrated. The Unitarian Universalist Association has not always been uniformly behind integration. Just as a congregation has a variety of views on any given topic, so does the association. Mark Morrison Reed writes in his book, Black Pioneers in a White Denomination, that African American ministers were shamefully treated by denominational leaders as they tried to establish and serve Unitarian and Universalist churches. Morrison Reed says that we were segregated then, and that's before the 60s, and it went back quite a long time, because we wanted to be. In the 60s, we were struggling for integration, as some of us at least championed the civil rights movement. James Luther Adams, another of our prophetic voices, related an indicative anecdote as he and others tried to integrate the First Unitarian Church of Chicago in the 60s. Two board members objected on grounds that trying to desegregate was creedal, and this was a non-creedal church. One night, the Board of Trustees really had it out. All right, Jones, you say you don't want the minister to preach in favor of integration. Well, no, you don't have to do it that way. Adams, who was the minister, asked him, what is the purpose of this church? And we kept it up until about 1:30. We haven't had any board meetings go that long, thank goodness. We were all worn out, and he was exhausted. Finally, he made one of the great statements in the history of religion. Okay, Jim, the purpose of this church is, well, the purpose of this church is to get a hold of people like me and change them. It's not easy to be prophetic ourselves when others challenge our opinions, our deeply held convictions. They are challenging our very image of who we are. Could I be a better person if I changed my views on, well, name the issue? Being prophetic is tough, challenging work, whether you are a leader or a follower. We might be unpopular with our friends or our neighbors. Prophets help us envision a new future, but it takes all of us working together in this task of being courageous, of standing up for what we believe. It takes support to be able to do our theology. Martin Luther King called upon ministers of many denominations back in March of 1965 when he was planning that march from Selma to Montgomery. Many Unitarians responded. Not very many others did. Many Unitarians responded. You heard the story of one such young minister, David Bumbaugh, now on the faculty of Meadville Lombard Theological School. King knew that the march needed to include a lot of the more influential, meaning white, folks to get his message out to the country and to the world. If white folks were there, then the news people would cover it. And indeed, a young black boy was killed, and no one saw about it. When James Reeb, the Unitarian minister, was killed, everyone heard about it, and the president responded, and there was finally rules. Our religious community is like that. We provide support for those who champion difficult and unpopular causes. Supporting social initiatives is part of who we Unitarians are. Our connections to each other are our salvation. Our connections are our relationships, which, while challenging sometimes, are also supportive and encouraging. Martin Luther King had a dream. It was this very concrete vision of what could be that kept him going. Beacon's dream is what keeps us going, too. We have this idea that we can be a voice of liberal religion in this part of Metro Vancouver. We know that we are a community of spiritual seekers who welcomes others, others of many spiritual paths, following a variety of theologies. I've referred to us as the Energizer Bunny, going on and on. In just 2 weeks, we will celebrate our 25th anniversary of this dream. It seems to me that we too have a dream, one that carries us along as we convey it to others. Our anniversary gives us the opportunity to reflect on our past and envision our future. We have a dream. Each week we take a time to share the responsibility of making this congregation work. At this time, there will be an offering in support of Beacon and its mission in the world.